Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
The following program was pre-recorded, and the views expressed do not necessarily represent those of this station or its management.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control.
Welcome to Education Nation, where we tackle the biggest issues in American education. School is now in session. Here are your hosts, Headmaster Rebecca Hagstrom and co-host Mark Durkin.
Well, good evening, and thank you for joining us here on Education Nation. I am your headmaster and host, Rebecca Hagstrom. And it's a privilege to join you every Saturday evening here on AM 1280 The Patriot. And I am joined in studio once again by our wonderful producer of Education Nation and my co-host, Mark Durkin.
Nice to see you again on this Saturday. How are
yes,
you, Rebecca?
Good to see you, too. We're getting closer and closer to that wonderful time of year.
It is. It's rapidly coming.
I know. Well, as tensions surrounding the contested presidential election results continue to grip the nation, there are also many questions surrounding what K-12 education will look like in Minnesota and across the nation.
That's right. As Minnesota counties report an increase in the number of positive COVID tests, will school districts across the entire state completely abandon in-person learning? If the Electoral College should certify Joe Biden as the 46th president, how would the potential LGBTQ Federal Equality Act affect K-12 school curriculums and hiring practices at religious private schools? Our guest tonight will help us make some sense of these big issues as we head into 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Well, here again in studio tonight to help us assess these issues and more is Minnesota State Senator Roger Chamberlain of Lino Lakes. Senator Chamberlain just won a hard-fought re-election campaign in District 38. He has been a guest on Education Nation several times in the past to discuss education legislation in the Minnesota legislature. Senator Chamberlain, thank you once again for joining us here on Education Nation.
Always good to be back.
We love having you.
Merry Christmas.
Well,
Christmas songs
we're
have
a little early.
Yes, they have.
We're a little early. It's not even quite Thanksgiving yet, but
depends whose house you're
but,
in, Senator.
Yes. I always say when we're approaching that time of year, I think everybody, my son and his wife, with that snow that we just had last week,
yes,
they put up their Christmas tree already.
Oh. That's a good spirit. A happy time.
Yep. So I understand. It felt like Christmas out there, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Well, let's turn our attention to Minnesota schools. As of this week, Governor Walz said he had no plans, or I should say last week, he had no plans to reclose schools. What is the discussion like concerning any prospects of school shutdowns amongst your colleagues in the legislature?
I'd start again with the schools and the parents. It's very hard on them. We've met with some superintendents, and it is incredibly difficult for educators, as you know.
Yes, I do.
In the private side of education, and they are doing their best, both the administrative side and the teachers, to manage this. And the administrators are getting it from both sides. They're getting it from the parents. Mm-hmm. More. They always had it from there and always had it from the other. Now it's just increased, as you may know, exponentially. So it is difficult, very difficult on them. We understand that. But right now, the governor has made more adjustments and the department's come down with changes again. And they have it based on number of cases in the county, which is very arbitrary. Very
yes.
Difficult.
Well, and in some counties, I understand they're counting prison population that has COVID positive. Is that accurate?
I don't know, but it wouldn't surprise me because it's in the county and they may not be making that distinction.
Removing that. Mm-hmm.
So it is hard, and I know the districts, two of the districts I represent, Hennepin, Anoka Hennepin, had decided to kind of push back a bit, and they're getting weary of this in some areas. And there are schools, 624 at White Bear Lake and ISD 12 Centennial, that, you know, they said, we haven't got any cases in the school, and we have a process to deal with it. So why should we have to shut down and go to distance when that, you know, so this one size fits all is very hard on the schools and the parents.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They can't plan. They can't get good education in this way. So the prospects, it's difficult for them, and we are aware of those difficulties. Again, that's why the governor should work with us more closely to manage this process to ensure that one size does not fit all and we can deal with this in a better way.
And this is actually one of the things that surprises me so much about how this whole pandemic has been handled, is it's so collectivist in the approach. Very Chinese communist government. It's as though they watched what China did with their people because it originated in Wuhan or Wuhan, and they expected that, okay, that's what we should all do everywhere. And it's unprecedented. We've never seen a Western country act like this. Now with Biden, they want to make it even more top down. They want to make it from the federal level.
People always talk about local control, but it's all just when it's convenient for them, right?
Just smoke screen.
And this is treating all schools the same, even within the same county, and applying these things that doesn't fit. It's really hard on these schools, and one size does not fit all. People like options and choices. That's what we're good at in this country, giving people options and choices. Mm-hmm. And we have the ability to make those things work, but we have to quit changing the rules for the schools, for the parents, and start looking at this more collaboratively again with the governor to solve this in a smarter, more effective way. Because it is incredibly damaging to our kids.
I cannot overstate that enough. As an educator, I just want our listeners to know that you cannot produce an education online like you do in the classroom. And the ones who are suffering the most are the ones that are in the inner city, the ones that the Democrats purport to want to help the most. And I just find it, I never thought I would see a day in America where children's education would literally be the most or the least important thing that people would consider. It has gone to the bottom of the barrel that nobody is thinking about the kids and what's best for the kids. We are going to lose this generation if they cannot. I mean, 1 year of education for a child. Think of that. If you're 6 or 7 years old, that's 1/7 of your life.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're 17 years old.
Yeah.
These are not small matters, and people are treating it like, oh, it's fine. They can be online. They'll just be online for a year or two. It's not a big deal. Yeah. It is a big deal.
It's huge. Well, look, I've spoke to a lot of educators, and yes, there are educators who are unhappy with this, and they don't want to be in the classroom. I get it. But most of the educators I've talked to, and even informal surveys and formal surveys and polls show that most educators want to be in the classroom. They know that's important. They know it has to be done.
Yep.
And you cannot do it any other way. It's always been the case throughout the history of the world. Technology cannot replace that.
Yeah,
it cannot.
Absolutely.
And we're going to have to work on this better with the governor. He has to include us to do this to get this right. Because, as you said, good point. The hardest hit are those who can least afford to have this setback.
Yep. Right. Exactly.
They can't afford it.
Yep.
You know, we were talking about how the one size does not fit for all, and nobody would know better than the individual representatives and the senators who represent their districts. They know what's going on in terms of inner workings. And even last week, the Minnesota Department of Health reported only 11 elementary schools in the state had 5 or more cases of COVID-19. That's just 1% of all elementary schools in the state of Minnesota. And positive tests, yes, they've been up with middle and high school students as well. The rising number of COVID positive tests per 10,000 people across Minnesota counties, I think, is really what's at stake here, is why you're seeing an increase in number of districts shifting even the youngest of learners to full-time distance learning. But despite the increase in these positive tests, which we knew were going to come as a result of the increase of testing and the arrival of the cold weather, why the transition away from in-person learning when the recovery rate of young children who test positive is higher than 99%? Again, this is we're talking data-driven, and it makes you really think and know that they're not taking the data into consideration.
Well, again, I'll say I get it. There are people out there, again, listening that are concerned, and they're still anxious. But they have to be reassured that all the smart folks out there that from Stanford,
right,
Oxford, Harvard again, and many places around the world, they are confident that we're going to be okay. And this is doing this sort of thing is very damaging for people and for kids. These lockdowns and this sort of constant shifting in the rules and what the school is supposed to be doing is incredibly hard on the kids and going to cause long-lasting damage. So we have to be smarter about how we address this, and we can address this with data, and people should be confident and assured that the numbers are good, we're going to be fine.
Yep.
What won't be good is if we continue this process, continue the harm every week, every month, this happens with our kids and our educators. Very going to have a lasting impact.
Yeah. Right.
The purported cure being worse than the virus itself.
Yeah. Well, of course, because President Trump is the one who actually first said that, I think that's why nobody on the left wants to acknowledge that that could actually be the case.
Right.
So that we've seen many of those things. Mm-hmm. Like a vaccine is on the way. No, it's not, says the left. And then 6 days after the election, suddenly Pfizer comes out with a 90% effective vaccine that is about to launch. So we've seen a lot of that real hypocrisy, really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, based on what you've heard from colleagues in the legislature and even from school superintendents, how much of a concern are the staffing shortages in school districts as an abundance of teachers are forced to quarantine because of positive COVID tests?
Well, again, this is part of the fallout from months and months and months of this, is that it's not only if you test, not only if you're sick and have symptoms or you test positive, but even if you were in a room with someone that was known later to have COVID and tested positive, and you can talk for 2 hours about the test process.
Right.
You are supposed to quarantine. Mm-hmm. Now, if you get tested, some of you out there know this, they I've seen the sheet. It says even if you get tested and it comes back negative, you still have to quarantine 14 days.
Yep. Longer than the person who has COVID, by the way.
So you
they
still,
only have to do 10 days.
Yes, you two would know this because you're in the system. Mm-hmm. You still have to do that for 14 days. Mm-hmm. So why should you even get a test?
Mm-hmm.
Why should you even get a test? Because wait the 14 days. But what this does is having, a terrible impact on the psyche of our culture and of individuals. And
it breeds fear.
It's fear and is going to break down the system. We cannot have a civil society and a functioning civil society this way.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot continue to change these rules and have four people continually moving these goalposts and have a functioning, civil, sustainable society. So people say, well, we have to do to get over this. We can do that, but this is going to destroy everything. You like your house in the suburbs, you like your vacations, you like your job, keep doing this. It's going to get a lot worse.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to get worse in a lot of different ways. So the hospitals, right? We got a report from the hospitals. Over 6,000 of their employees in a certain – I forget if it's statewide or metro – are out because they've either tested positive or they were in a room with someone.
Right. And you know what?
We have
several emergency room doctors amongst our parents at the school that I run, Liberty Classical Academy. And one of them said, it's actually the reason why we have shortage of hospital rooms now is because of the earlier lockdowns and the fact that they didn't allow the surgeries and such that were not that were elective surgeries.
Catching up.
And so what she said is that then because the hospitals lost so much money, they've had to let go of staff.
And once you let go of the staff, then, you know, now that you have an uptick in COVID, she said, we've got plenty of rooms in our hospital. And this is a major St. Paul hospital. We just don't have the staff to cover it because the hospital can't afford to pay the staff.
And the hospital's not going to hire back a bunch of staff not knowing
what's going to happen in the future.
What's going to happen
right.
if they can't have stability.
Yeah.
That gets back to the point. You cannot have a civil, functioning, stable, sustainable culture in society at this rate because people will have to do what they have to do to survive. Mm-hmm. The hospitals aren't going to hire all these people back thinking that, well, if they go to this again, they'll have to lay them off.
Yeah.
There's elective surgeries, all that stuff. So it's a ripple effect. This is not in a vacuum. It's not isolated. These are serious things, folks.
Yep.
And call me what you want. But this is reality. It's serious. And it's paralyzing our hospitals and healthcare system and our education system and many other vital mm-hmm. parts. Not just buying things, but just functioning and having police show up or
Did you hear Minneapolis is now considering giving more money to the police force? I'm sorry, I'm getting way off here. But to pay for more police because they were so degraded after the riots that many of them have quit and left. And now the very council that called to defund the police is actually looking at trying to put more money
the
in there.
Council that hates the police,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, period.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to get you off there.
This has long-lasting ripple effects in every aspect of our life and culture. And we either have to learn to deal with it, or that's a choice. People can choose, we're going to do this, or we're going to get back to normal. Choose. But the one way is not very happy, pleasant way in the end.
Right.
Well, I will say, too, when the crowds were gathering on the streets to celebrate Joe Biden, the conversation for COVID and the need for social distancing went away, too.
Yeah, very quickly.
Yes. Right. Absolutely.
Well, speaking of which, the president media-elect, I call him the media-elect Joe Biden, has pledged the passage and full enforcement of the LGBTQ Equality Act in his first 100 days in office. Now, the Equality Act, for those who may not be familiar with it, it would amend federal laws to prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in public accommodations and facilities, education, federal funding, employment, and housing. If this piece of legislation, Senator Chamberlain, is signed into law, where does this leave local school districts in terms of freedom when it comes to curriculum design and implementation?
Well, I think a lot of school districts are already doing this because there is a federal law. But as far as freedom, local control that we talked about before, it just doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. We've been trying for years to disentangle the feds from the state,
right?
Even to the point of getting rid of No Child Left Behind and doing our own thing and come up with a few hundred million dollars to fill the gap. So we're being disentangled from that. but it takes away their choice and freedom. And I tell parents all the time, do you want – most parents want options and choice. It's been in survey and polls, 60, 70, 80, 90%, depending on the group you're polling. Hispanics, 80% of Hispanics want more choice and more options.
Right.
Not surprising.
They want to go the other way.
Yeah.
So this is countered. Look, nobody wants discrimination. Nobody wants harm to anybody. That's fine.
Right.
But we're talking about this is already law, but this heavier enforcement and taking away local options and control, and I think even filtering out to private schools in the end too. So I'm not taking a personal position on this. It's people's choice, right? My position is irrelevant on that, but it's a choice of the parent and the educators and the system and the district how they want to educate their kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said.
Yeah. Well, let's address the future state of religious liberties here a little bit when it comes to the Equality Act. Biden, in an interview with the Philadelphia Gay News, had said that, quote, we need to root out discrimination in our laws, institutions, and public spaces. And then he said religion should not be used as a license to discriminate. And as president, I will oppose legislation to deny LGBTQ equal treatment in public places. I will immediately reverse discriminatory practices that President Trump put in place and work to advance the rights of LGBTQ people widely, end of quote. Now, just over the summer, if you recall, the U.S. Supreme Court was very busy. They affirmed and strengthened the 2012 ministerial exception, and that protects religious organizations from some lawsuits. For example, the ruling in Our Lady of Guadalupe School versus Morrissey Baru indicated that those involved in almost any kind of religious instruction would be considered ministers of the faith, no matter their official title or even if they practiced the faith themselves. Now, while Justices Sotomayor and the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg dissented, saying the decision gave religious employers free rein to discriminate, it was Justice Samuel Alito who really wrote for the majority, and he really came to bat for educators and education. He said, quote, "The religious education and formation of students is the very reason for the existence of most private religious schools, and therefore the selection and supervision of the teachers upon whom the schools rely to do their work lie at the core of their mission," end of quote. Now, as someone who has been a fierce and consistent advocate for school choice such as yourself, what problems do you envision and fear for private schools if such a piece of legislation is federally mandated?
Again, you know, people in this country have a right to live their lives the way they see fit. Mm-hmm. And as long as you stay in your sandbox and don't come over and try to take my stuff and vice versa, we'll be all right. Mm-hmm. I do not – honestly do not know where they are not – where a segment of the population is being denied equal access to all the things of our culture and society, whether it's treatment under the law or access to facilities, et cetera, et cetera. What this is talking about is association and freedom of a religion. Should an organization or the president come in and say, look, Islam, Muslim school or Hindu school or Christian school or Jewish school, I don't care what your religion says, you're going to accept this and you're going to take it.
Mm-hmm.
I say no.
Right.
Yes,
this
absolutely no.
This is not the way a free, open-minded, empowered society works. It allows people to choose and follow their path. If you're LGBTQ, there are churches and organizations that support that fully. But to require that a Christian school or an Islamic school or a Hindu school or a Jewish school or anybody of that sort take in and do this stuff is clearly a violation of those rights.
It is.
So, again, say what you want about me, but I'm here to protect everybody's rights, LGBTQ and religious and everybody in between.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't enforce your stuff on someone else who has that freedom to do that. As long as they're not coming over to your sandbox and trying to take your stuff and tell you how to work and live and what you should buy and not buy and eat and not eat, then we're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
But start butting your nose other places and trying to make everybody the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's not a free, empowered, diverse society.
Right.
It's a coerced, oppressive society.
And it certainly doesn't reflect what the founders' intentions were when they talked about freedom of religion.
No. Right. I mean, you get to practice it. You don't get to – if you don't like the rules of the club, leave the club and make your own club.
Yep.
It's that easy.
Lots of opportunities out there in this big bad – in this big wonderful world. I was going to say this big bad world. It is kind of bad right now, but – oh, gee. Well, the shrinking DFL majority in the Minnesota House, do you think – and as Mark says, this is really a rhetorical question – are we any closer to real, authentic discussion when it comes to school choice? And is there any chance that the school choice legislation could actually make its way to the governor's desk this coming legislative session?
Well, there's always hope, and there's always hope for progress. We've been at this for years. You have been at it for years.
Yep.
Like I said earlier, 75 polling is consistent. 75% of African-Americans, 80% of Hispanics and others want more options. They want school choice. They want self-determination. They want to empower parents. And the opposition to that, frankly, is the teachers' union. I know teachers, this is not going to ruin the profession. It'll improve everything. But are we to ignore? If you want to talk about racial inequity and systematic racial issues, therein lies the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We can get to 90% proficiency in literacy in this state if we just knock down some of these barriers and get around the teachers' union. But there's a gentleman I work with, Rashad Turner. He's going after the teachers' union for this stuff. This is about we're always making progress, and we need to continue on this because it is empowering and will be the single most powerful reform and will lift thousands and thousands of kids out of poverty and give them opportunities they never had. this will be it. So if you want to address racial inequities, education, literacy.
Absolutely.
This will do it.
That is at the core. I couldn't agree with you more, Senator Chamberlain. That is truly where the true systemic racism exists, is mm-hmm. in our nation's inner city schools.
Mm-hmm.
So in the event that President Trump is proven to be right concerning the charges associated with election fraud and the electoral votes are awarded to him to serve another 4 years, we can expect his encouragement for patriotic education curriculums in our nation's schools. The federal government doesn't have jurisdiction, however, over school curriculums. So is this something that school choice advocates in the legislature like yourself might get behind so that you can maybe encourage school districts across the state to adopt as a means of combating the infiltration of such things such as the 1619 projects, critical race theory, Black Lives Matter within the classroom?
Right. I should back up 1 second. I should say there is bipartisan support for both options and choice for parents. That mm-hmm. does not broad, but it is there. It does exist. As far as this goes, yeah, so at the state, this has been something that, again, people from both sides of the aisle have been working on about just sort of improving civics,
mm-hmm.
civics
yes.
education. Republicans and Democrats have offered legislation to improve that aspect of it. Equal education for all students, equal opportunities for all students, equal access and local control to the extent that we can, and everybody can benefit from that. 2 + 2 = 4. 2 + 2 is not racist.
Yep.
It's not yep. racist. We need to pay attention to all that stuff, but teaching and preaching one side to the other over the true goal of education and improving people's knowledge is not the right way to go. So mm-hmm. we have to be aware of all those things, as you two know, being in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the state has worked on that, and we have addressed it in the past.
Yeah. Well, we just have about a minute here left. I just want to touch base in conclusion here on what we discussed a little bit briefly at the beginning of our program last week, election vote count integrity. Now, election officials in Michigan, they have said that during the November 3rd elections, there was a software glitch that caused a 6,000 vote swing that was meant for Republicans but ended up tallied for the Democrats. Mm-hmm. And this quote-unquote glitch was reported to have been discovered in 47 counties in Michigan alone. And potentially, this software could have been used in up to 30 states. Is there any concern for the integrity of the election count here in Minnesota?
Yes, there is. I don't know. I do not think we use a lot of Dominion. I don't think there's a lot of counties using that software, but certainly there is just statistical and other circumstantial evidence. Statistical analysis suggests that there is a problem with the vote count here.
Mm-hmm.
We
mm-hmm.
know that they've done it in Minneapolis by buying votes and intimidating people, but yes, there is.
Okay. Well, on that note, not a very positive note, we really need to tie things up here. But
Merry
we are,
Christmas.
Again, so glad to have you on. Yes, happy Thanksgiving, Merry Christmas. And Roger, we'll have you back in, of course, once the legislature goes back in session. And we look forward to being able to talk with you again then. And to our listeners, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And Mark, thank you as always.
Always a great
You're a
discussion.
Wonderful co-host.
Good to be here.
Yes, it is. And for anybody who wants to listen to this podcast, please go to ednationmn.org. See you next week.